Let's talk to Bruce Williamson from the Independent Railway Campaign Group, Rail Future. Hello, Bruce.
Morning, Rachel.
So, this nationalisation of passenger rail services, let's be specific here and try and understand exactly what that means. Can you talk us through it?
Yeah. Well, what happens is that the existing commercial franchises that haven't already been nationalised will come to the end of their term, whenever that is, and they will just lapse into public ownership or public operation. But that has happened already with a number of franchises. There are four franchises. I think it's LNER, Northern, Trans-Pennine Express and South Eastern, which are currently owned by the government. They're state-owned. So we already have this part nationalisation of the railways. And, of course, many years ago, Railtrack became Network Rail in public ownership. So, you know, I think what will happen is that the services will continue largely as they are. It's certainly going to be the same trains driven by the same drivers, managed probably by the same managers. Running on the same routes with the same fares. So other than the appearance of the British Rail logo, perhaps, not much will change practically.
Well, what will the difference be then in that case?
Well, the idea is, I suppose, that for those who don't like the idea of privatisation, and that is the vast majority of rail users, you know, renationalisation is a very popular policy. So the argument is that these profiteering companies will stop profiteering because they'll cease to exist, and those profits will be reinvested in the railway. I think there's some truth in that, but it's not going to be a transformation overnight.
No, and when you look at the performance of those rail companies that you've mentioned already that have been brought back under government control, like LNER, Southeastern, Trans-Pennine and so on, is there evidence that they are doing better under this system?
I think LNER has been fairly good under public ownership. I mean, I don't have sort of stats to back that up, but you know, it certainly hasn't been a disaster. You know, the punctuality levels, I think, you know, on Britain's railways generally, they're very variable from route to route. You know, some are notably better than others, as you're well aware. But they're sort of, you know, on a par with what it was like under British Rail, and they're probably on a par with some of the European equivalents.
The thing is, you want these things to be self-servicing, don't you? So you don't want it to get to the point whereby if we can't get enough passengers on the trains, if you can't keep up with costs, that public money, more public money is having to be pumped into the rails. What are the dangers of that?
Well, yeah, I mean, the governments, you know, of all persuasions don't like spending money. It's also worth noting that the level of fares is and always has been controlled by the government. So, you know, John Major's fantasy of competition bringing down costs and, you know, making fares cheaper never happened. So under a nationalised railway, it's absolutely Labour's choice about whether to continue with inflation-busting rail fares, and I certainly hope they don't, or to do something about the outrageous cost of rail and bring down fares. But obviously that requires money, and you know, money is tight at the moment.
Yeah, and a lot of people feel quite strongly that we shouldn't be subsidising rail fares when not everyone can benefit from that, particularly if you live in the sort of further reaches of the United Kingdom. And it's not just about cost of railways. People want reliability, as we were saying, they want decent Wi-Fi, but it's other stuff as well. It's like automatic delay repay, so you don't have to go through that slightly laborious system if trains are late, digital season tickets that operate right across the network, a more simplified ticket purchasing system that will guarantee best prices. How quickly can all those things be achieved?
I think some of them can be achieved fairly quickly. We certainly need ticket reform. And, you know, already we have some progress towards, you know, making it seamless and on your card. So you go on the tube, for instance, and it works out the cheapest fare. You don't need an Oyster card. You might just use your existing bank card. That needs to be rolled out across the network and integrated. Technically, it's doable. It just requires a sort of political will and someone with a little bit of technical nous to bring it together. And surely it's not that difficult to fix the Wi-Fi on the trains as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand why that is so problematic, but maybe someone out there with better knowledge than us will be able to inform us. We often look over to the continent longingly for a reliable, cheap train service. But as we've been hearing from our colleagues in Germany over the last month, it's not that good there.
Yeah, I think there is a danger of seeing our European counterparts with rose-tinted spectacles. You know, the issue of fares, certainly almost all European railways are much, much cheaper than ours. But, you know, the level of, yeah, in fact, I think you're right. Germany particularly is going through a bad patch with its railways. And we also have probably the safest railway in Germany, in Europe. We have an excellent safety record on British railways. And we have, you know, a much more dense railway network. There are many more services than in equivalent European countries. The rail services are much sparser. So, you know, we need to look on the bright side sometimes as well. It's not all bad.
No, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way. Avanti being called in to talk to the new Transport Secretary because of their recent poor service. There is a possibility they could have their contract taken away from them. I think the legal position is after 3 years, it can be removed with 3 months' notice. Do you think they need some kind of ultimatum to improve services on that line?
Yeah, I mean, clearly there's a problem with services, although I used Avanti just a couple of days ago and it was on time and I got a seat and the staff were lovely. But yeah, it's a problematic rail franchise. It's not easy to sort of fix. You know, the idea that you sort of give the managers a kick up the bum and they get their act together, I think it's a lot more complex than that. But more generally, I would say that you get what you pay for, and reliability is largely dependent on investment. If you force the railway to run on a shoestring budget, they end up using clapped out trains and can't do the maintenance that they need, and that's what causes unreliability.
Well, but it's also the reliability is also about having enough drivers, having drivers in the right place, having drivers that aren't striking. So that's another thing that this government will need to sort out.
Oh, indeed, yes, and I'm fairly optimistic they can solve the striking issue. They both sides seem a bit more conciliatory than under the Tories, and yeah, the having enough drivers available, of course, is one of the consequences of franchising, where you know the commercial operators are under pressure to run their railway as cheaply as possible, you know, to put in the lowest bid, which means that they've got less money to spend on hiring drivers. So they have the roster of spare drivers down to an absolute minimum. And of course, when one is ill or whatever, then that's where you get the problems of unreliability.
Yeah. Great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Cheers.
Bruce Williamson from the Independent Railway Campaign Group, Rail Future.